This week, we're bringing you some of the best Today in Focus episodes from the year so far. Today, an episode from February. How a former mafia boss turned on his own family, leading to one of the biggest trials in Italy's history.
I grew up in Sicily during the golden age of the Sicilian mafia in the 80s. So you could hear people talking about mobsters being arrested or people talking about mobsters getting richer and richer. You hear every day news of killings. And the thing that I remember was it was something you shouldn't talk about in front of people. You don't talk openly when mobsters are living a few hundred meters away from your house.
Lorenzo Tondo, a journalist with The Guardian, has spent much of his career reporting on the Italian mafia. This story has taken him north of Sicily to Calabria, on the boot of the mainland. It is a region of rugged mountains and old-style Italian villages that overlook the clear blue sea.
And of course, Calabria is the land of the 'Ndrangheta. Today, by far, the most powerful criminal group in Italy and one of the richest in the world. Several bosses of the 'Ndrangheta live like hermits hidden in the Calabrian mountains. They spend years hidden in bunkers. They built escape tunnels under their houses and hideouts in the woods for when they are on the run. And while doing so, they sent their children to study to schools or university. They studied the secrets of the high finance, the secrets of Wall Street, I would say. They made billions from drug trafficking.
And now one of those children has turned on his own family, triggering one of the biggest mafia trials Italy has seen in decades.
In the 80s, in Sicily, several journalists have been killed by the mafia. So when you are in Calabria as a journalist, sometimes you think if you should start worrying about your life because you feel the power and the strength of these clans, and you wonder if the authorities can prevent them from killing a journalist or people. You feel sometimes that they are more powerful than the authorities.
Now the authorities are determined to wrestle control from the 'Ndrangheta, a mafia that has had a stranglehold on communities across Italy for decades. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, inside the trial to bring down Italy's biggest mafia. Lorenzo, this trial is focusing on one mafia group, the 'Ndrangheta. Now, within mafias, you have clans, basically huge extended family groups. And this trial pivots on the evidence of one of these family members, Emanuele Mancuso. Can you tell me about him?
Emanuele Mancuso was a young boss of the Libaldi Mancuso clan in Vibo Valentia in Calabria. He was described as a smart man, very, very, very powerful and feared by the members of his clan, of his own clan. I mean, he was the son of Boss Luni Mancuso, one of the most important members of the clan. Emanuele was dealing with drug trafficking with South America, and he was accused of having ordered several killings in Calabria. He was arrested in the course of a police operation between 2015 and 2016, and he spent month and month in jail. And at some point, I mean, he must have felt trapped in prison facing a long trial. So in 2018, he decided to speak out and collaborate with prosecutors.
Va più a condurre una vita dell'ndranghetista Emanuele Mancuso, 31enne, figlio del boss Pantaleone, l'ingegnere, e così ha deciso di collaborare con il procuratore di Catanzaro Nicola Gratteri.
When he decided to collaborate with prosecutors, that was a huge news in Italy, because 'Ndrangheta clans are characterized by deep blood relations. And this is a characteristic that until recently has made this organization virtually impenetrable. It's hard to betray your father or your uncle.
And why did he decide to do it, Lorenzo?
It's hard to say every time a former mobster decides to speak out and collaborate with the magistrates and why they're risking their life. Emanuele is the father of a little girl, and he has said several times that his daughter was the most important thing for him, and that his fear was that cooperating with the magistrates could have had repercussions on his daughter. He feared that the mobster could have killed his daughter. At the same time, he feared that with him in jail, was about to grow up surrounded by mobsters. Of course, when you decide to collaborate with the police, you get a discount on your sentence.
Yeah, and I suppose if he feels it gives him a chance to maybe get out and see his daughter at some point, he's going to take it.
Yes.
At the heart of this trial, then, is the Mancuso family, and in particular, Emanuele's uncle, Luigi. What kind of crimes are they accused of?
The Mancuso clan is a very powerful clan. They deal mainly with drug trafficking. And Luigi Mancuso, you can compare it to a sort of Al Capone or to Totò Riina in Sicily. Luigi Mancuso is accused of money laundering, of ordering several killings and drug trafficking. The other defendants are accused of similar charges. Of course, politicians, the police chief and other officials and public administrators are accused of hiding the mafia. So it's a different charge for them.
So it's not just a trial of mafia members, but also of politicians and other officials. Sounds like this is trying to tackle an endemic problem. How risky is it for Emanuele to testify?
It's very risky for Emanuele Mancuso, this trial. You should think that a few months ago, he wrote a letter to the authorities asking them to protect his daughter, because he knows that, her daughter could be in danger when he will sit before the judge and testify against his uncle. Of course, that day his daughter will be in danger.
Under heavy security, in the heartland of where the 'Ndrangheta hold power, the trial of more than 350 suspected members and associates of the Calabrian Mafia got underway. Most of the accused appearing on video link from their jail cells.
This is being called a maxi trial, which is a term I hadn't heard of before. What does it mean?
When you have hundreds of defendants, you usually call this a maxi trial. And this is, of course, the largest one in Italy, in 3 decades. 900 witnesses are called to testify against more than 350 people. This is such a big trial that they had to build for the occasion a high security courtroom with cages to hold the defendants. The courtroom has a capacity of 1,000 people, and there are 150 cages to hold the defendants.
This is a big trial, and incredible that they've managed to pull it off under COVID conditions. But actually, it is one of a series of very major trials, and each one brings its kind of hopes and anxieties, particularly about the witnesses. They're big events, and they can change the course of history.
Claire Longrigg is a Guardian editor and has written several books about the mafia.
The 'Ndrangheta were for years in the shadow of Cosa Nostra, who are on the island of Sicily, until the early 90s, when Cosa Nostra, the authorities cracked down on them very hard, and that gave the Calabrian Mafia an opportunity to rise. And they took over principally the drug trafficking business, and they made links in the early 90s with South American cocaine producers. And their ascent from there has become meteoric. They've become incredibly powerful all over Europe.
What have been some of the 'Ndrangheta's more notable crimes over the years?
During the 70s and the early 80s, the 'Ndrangheta made a lot of money out of kidnapping. So they would kidnap the children of local dignitaries and also industrialists. And at one point, they kidnapped the son of John Paul Getty, the oil tycoon.
The kidnappers sliced off the boy's right ear after his grandfather had initially refused to pay a $3 million ransom.
I would basically rather not comment on that, in that I can, of course, understand his feeling and anybody's feeling about not paying ransom. Mother and father, we're prepared to negotiate.
But what the kidnapping showed us, which was particularly sinister, is the hold that the 'Ndrangheta had on local communities, because nobody would tell the authorities. You know, there would be people involved in bringing food or looking after the person who was being held prisoner, and nobody would turn them in or alert the authorities.
And looking at the structure of the 'Ndrangheta, it's made up of several clans, isn't it? This maxi trial, as we've said, will focus on the Mancusos. Do the clans work together, or is there rivalry between them?
There have been feuds between different clans that have involved hundreds of murders, as they basically wipe out whole generations of men and then start on the children. So there have been terrible times in Calabria when it was impossible for young men and boys to even leave their houses. Communities went on to lockdown and people would be shot in the street. A tremendous amount of violence.
For the people at the top of 'Ndrangheta, what is life like for them?
For the families of the mafia bosses, life is extremely proscribed from day one. There are women from these families who've testified, in fact, about life in the mafia. And for the boys, the minute they're born, they're given kind of guns to play with, whereas the girls are inculcated with the understanding that they're going to be making a diplomatic marriage, so they'll be making a useful marriage for the clan. And they don't get to choose. There isn't the kind of freedom that you could expect as a young European. You know, a lot of people have sort of described it as a death cult because the order of the day is violence. You know, if a woman steps a foot wrong, or even a man from a mafia family in Calabria, it is the duty of his or her closest relatives to kill them.
How has the group grown over the years, Claire?
The 'Ndrangheta has taken a huge leap economically since the 80s and 90s. They have made an enormous amount of money out of drug trafficking, so they've got extraordinary links with northern Italian and European banks to run these rivers of drug money through and make them legitimate. They've moved through Europe, especially to Germany and Holland, to the UK and London for money laundering purposes, because the British financial system is extremely favourable to people laundering drug money. And emigres who moved to Australia and Canada have become very strong 'Ndrangheta contacts. So the network has really spread all over the world.
How much of the global cocaine trade does the 'Ndrangheta control?
The latest figures I've read say that they import 80% of the cocaine to Europe.
Wow. With that in mind, I mean, how much money are they making?
Their annual turnover is 44 billion euros.
Wow.
Which, again, is a lot.
Clearly, Claire, this mafia group is a huge problem, not only for the communities in which it operates in Italy, but also globally. Has anyone from this group been prosecuted before now?
There have been a series of major trials over the years featuring hundreds of defendants. There was a trial in the 90s called Olympia, which was really important because it was the first one to really prove the links between the mafia and politics, which has been the kind of bane of Calabria forever. There have always been these links between the mafia and business and politics. Every sort of public contract, whether it's a school or a road, water, sanitation, was given to the mafia through these connections. A trial has just ended in Reggio Calabria, where a mafia boss was sentenced to 15 years. And the trial has proven that the 'Ndrangheta has a pyramid structure, whereas it's always been thought that the 'Ndrangheta was a kind of cellular organization, just networks of families. But in fact, it turns out from this trial that there is a structure at the very top with a small number of people giving orders.
Is it really then through these trials, Claire? Is that how we've learned about the 'Ndrangheta over the years? It's come out in these cases.
Yes, these cases have been very important in revealing, in proving. Each one has had to prove legally that the mafia exists, that these people form part of a group. And originally, it was incredibly hard for prosecutors to obtain convictions because originally they would be judging each crime on its own. So they could never got the full picture. But as soon as the judges were able to secure convictions of the mafia as an organization, that really changed things and it made it possible to prosecute mafiosi for being part of a group, not just for one particular crime.
Lorenzo, Emanuele has done an extraordinary thing in breaking away from his family like this, but he isn't where this investigation began. How long have prosecutors been trying to bring this case against the 'Ndrangheta?
Almost all the defendants were arrested in December 2019 after a lengthy investigation that began in 2016. So it was a long, long investigation. About 2,500 officers took part in the police operation and the authorities deployed an elite unit, soldiers known as the cacciatori, literally the hunters. And they arrested several suspects hiding in bunkers located behind sliding staircases, hidden trapdoors and manholes. It was a very, very complicated police operation because you have to arrest hundreds of people and you have to do that within 2 days, maximum 3 days, or they're going to be in the run. It's really hard when you have dozens of mobsters in jail. Imagine when you have hundreds and you have to investigate their links with the public administrators who are accused of allegedly helping mobsters and the clans to make profits.
This then is a huge investigation. And there is one man who's the face of it, really, the lead prosecutor, Nicola Gratteri.
Buongiorno a tutti. Grazie di essere qui. Perché sarete voi testimoni, divulgatori di una giornata importante, storica, non solo per la Calabria.
Can you tell me about him?
Nicola Gratteri is one of the most famous prosecutors in Italy. He definitely is one of the most powerful magistrates in the country. He is from Calabria. In the course of his career, he has arrested thousands of mobsters and led hundreds of investigations against the 'Ndrangheta.
Cioè, col discorso dei sequestri di persona, il sequestro di persona è diventato a un certo punto un problema di Stato. Ci sono stati dei momenti in cui, per alcuni sequestri di persona, stava cadendo il governo.
He is seen by many as a sort of a iron prosecutor. He's been described as an iron prosecutor. He believes in this trial. And in a recent interview, he told me that he named this trial Rinascita, which means rebirth, because he hopes that this trial can be a true rebirth for the people of Calabria who are tired of living with the 'Ndrangheta.
How many times have you interviewed Gratteri?
Probably over 20 times.
What's he like as a person?
He's, you said his expression in English, he's a man of few words.
Yes, we have many men of few words.
Okay, great. Yeah, he's a man of few words, but when he say those few words, he always pick the right words.
He's a media star in Italy and beyond. I mean, the coverage of this trial has been absolutely massive. And it's great that he can do that because it's much more likely to make the people involved feel safer if the eyes of the world are on the trial.
350 people are on trial in Italy in the biggest case against the mob in decades.
And arriving at court, the man who has spent decades battling Italy's most powerful mafia.
He has to move quickly. The chief prosecutor of Catanzaro, Nicola Gratteri, has powerful enemies. Italy's number one mafia hunter is leading the fight against the notorious Calabrian network, the 'Ndrangheta.
What does this mean his life is like?
Gratteri has been living under police escort since 1989. It's not easy, and Italy has a long history of prosecutors killed by the mafia. Falcone and Borsellino, just to mention, the two famous judges were killed.
It was May the 23rd, 1992, when the judge's car was blown up by a half-ton bomb on a motorway in Sicily. His wife and three bodyguards also died.
I mean, it's a dangerous task.
One time I remember when I was in Reggio Calabria, he didn't really have time to do an interview. So he swung by in his armoured car and picked me up from my hotel, and we drove through the town and did the interview in the back of the armoured car. I've got to say, it's incredibly impressive. Those cars, they weigh so much. When you open the door, you need to put your whole weight on the door to get in and out.
Did Gratteri have a role in persuading Emanuele Mancuso to give evidence?
He had a huge role. Gratteri has met with Mancuso several times in jail in 2018. And at that point, they probably understood that he was seriously the missing piece of this huge puzzle. Everything they had collected started to make sense.
Lorenzo, what stage is the trial at now?
Imagine that the judge has to listen to all the 900 witnesses. It's going to be a long trial, probably over 2 years.
Coming up, how the 'Ndrangheta has seized upon the pandemic as a business opportunity. Claire, you've talked about the potential opportunity this trial offers to disrupt the 'Ndrangheta's operations. But I've been thinking about the pandemic too and the impact it's had on Italy's economy. Family businesses have gone bust across the country. People have lost their jobs. Has the mafia been able to take advantage of that?
COVID has been an absolute boon to the mafia. It works on several different fronts. One is that they have been infiltrating the health system. So they now own clinics and they've been able to get hold of PPE and equipment and obviously stockpile it and sell it on for a huge profit. But also they've been behaving like banks, really. Any businesses that are in difficulty, which as we know from our own experience here, people are having a terribly difficult time, particularly in hospitality, restaurants and hotels. The mafia is there to lend them money. And of course, if they get into trouble, which a lot of them will, and aren't able to pay back the money, the mafia will simply own those businesses. They've been increasing their local support by helping people out. So delivering food parcels, delivering medicines. They need the local support of the community. And in this sort of way, people get in the habit of turning to the mafia whenever they need anything. It's a serious threat. And this is not just in Calabria, it will be in the whole of Italy.
That's so interesting that they've been able to take advantage, I suppose, at points where the state hasn't been able to step in at such a difficult time. I mean, what could be the impact of that more long-term?
I think the long-term impact will set back the cause of liberating Calabria from the mafia. You need a change of mentality. You need young people to see that there's a freedom beyond this way of living. And if they are indebted to the mafia in any way, then that is kind of shut down again. And the mafia retains its stranglehold over communities.
Yeah, I mean, it's so deeply interwoven in Italian society, isn't it, the mafia? And this case, this trial that has begun now, how far do you think it, and Gratteri's team, how far can they go in dismantling this system?
You know, for a businessman in Calabria to be able to just do what he wants to do, to run his company without having to pay tax to the mafia, without having to use the firms that the mafia tells him to, without having to get permission for every last thing, will be a tremendous liberation. So if this trial goes anywhere towards promoting that freedom to operate, that will be a big step.
And what do you think it would mean internationally for there to be a guilty verdict in this trial?
In terms of drug trafficking, you know, the port at Gioia Tauro, which is the main entry for drugs from South America, has been in control of this clan. So that may make a difference. But, you know, as I said before, the mafia is pretty adaptable, so they'd probably find another route. And as we know, they've got tentacles all over the world. So I don't want to sound pessimistic, but it might not be the end of anything.
Claire, thank you.
Thank you so much. It was great.
That was Claire Longrigg and Lorenzo Tondo. Read full coverage of the trial and more about the inner workings of the 'Ndrangheta at theguardian.com, where you can also find an episode we made with Claire in 2018 called Is This the End of the Sicilian Mafia? That's it for today. This episode was produced by Hannah Moore and sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.